Bria wasn't surprised when Vic fell into step beside her after the devotions. As usual, he took her arm to help support her. This time she leaned against him, grateful for his support.
You were right.
Forgive me for doubting you.
Her teeth began to chatter.
I feel so betrayed. I don't have anything left.
She began crying.
Nothing. Nothing. Of course you do.
Vic kissed her cheek gently.
You've got us, right? Us? Sure. We're gonna be together, sweetheart. We're gonna get off this hellish planet and we're gonna be happy.
Escape? Vic nodded.
You got it.
But you need those credits they're paying you to try and get into the academy. How can you give up that? He shrugged. One credit is as good as another. I'll just have to get it out of Terruenza another way. It took her a minute to realize what Vic was talking about.
The collection. You're planning to steal Terruenza's collection and escape.
Vic nodded approvingly. And you're gonna help me, right? She hesitated. Stealing was contrary to everything she'd ever believed in. But Terruenza's antiquities weren't in a museum where the public could see them. They were being hoarded by a greedy private collector. Bria drew a long, shaky breath.
Okay. I'll help you, Vic.
She frowned.
What about Murg? You told me that he'd given his word to guard you.
Vic drew a long breath. That's the Vrelt in the kitchen. I don't know what I'm going to do about him. I really like the big guy, but I'm afraid he'll be loyal to Terruenza no matter what.
What are we going to do? What if we can't get away?
Don't worry, honey. Leave that to me. Vic sighed. I'm a better shot than Murg is and much faster on the draw. I just wish I could convince him to throw in with us. If he did, I'd take him wherever he wanted to go and give him enough credits to continue his search. He told her about Murg's lost mate. Bria drew in her breath, startled.
Vic, there was another Tagorian here. I remember seeing one. Oh, 6, maybe 8 months back.
Vic shook his head. I'll have to tell Murg. Those priests lie for a living. Bria pleaded.
Please, Vic, tell me you didn't mean that about shooting Murg.
Vic's voice was grim. I'll take care of him, whatever it takes. If I have to, I'll shoot him. Maybe I can just stun him. Or give him a knock on that thick skull of his. Leave him tied up so the priests won't blame him when we make our getaway. Just out of sight, Murg turned and glided soundlessly through the jungle. The next morning, Han whistled cheerfully as he stepped out of the shower and headed for his clothes. He had no warning. One moment he was walking, the next something had grabbed him and flung him to the floor so hard it knocked the wind out of him. Han managed to focus his eyes.
Murg? What's going on?
Murg snarled into Han's face.
Pilot planning to escape. Take Bria. Vic planning to steal from Yelishan masters. Vic planning to take care of Murg. Now treacherous pilot will die.
No!
Han put his hands up in a gesture of appeal.
Please, just listen.
Murg listened last night. Murg heard plenty.
The hands started down. Han squeezed his eyes shut and waited for the end. He felt the breeze of the Tagorian swing graze his cheek, his throat, but nothing touched him. Han opened his eyes. Murg was staring down at him, plainly torn. Finally, he grabbed Han by the shoulder, jerked him to his feet, and pushed him in the direction of his clothes.
Get dressed. Murg not want pilot's blood on his claws. We go to tell Terruenza what pilot and girl are planning. Priest will tell other guards to kill traitors.
Han hastened over to the bunk, began dragging on his clothes. Listen, Murg, I think Mrav is here, Anyalisha. I think Terruenza lied to you. Murg stared at Han, then his blue eyes narrowed.
You would lie to stay alive, Vic.
Yeah, I would, pal, Han said honestly. But I swear to you, I ain't lying about this. Han related what Bria had told him, and then he began hatching a plan. In a couple of days, I've got to deliver a message from Zaval to a hut on Nalhutta. I've never been to Nalhutta, and I don't know the drill there, but Jalas Nebel has. I'm pretty sure Terawenza will agree to let me and Nebel fly this mission together. I'm going to suggest that you stay here, because there won't be room for you. Han began pacing back and forth as he thought. The priests know you like to hunt, right? So when I get permission to take Nebel with me, you should request to spend a couple of days hunting. You can move fast over rough ground, right? Murg nodded. Very fast. Do you think you could make it on foot to Colony 2? Yes, Murg sounded positive. Well, it's our best shot. If Mrav is still here on Yalicia, it's a good chance that she's at Colony 2. You go there and scout it out. Find out if she's there.
And rescue her.
Murg leapt to his feet. No, sit down. That would be the worst thing to do. They'd start a planet-wide search for the two of you. Just find her. Then, when we make our getaway, you and me will hop over to Colony 2 and break her out of there. That evening, Han went over to Terawenza's treasure room to find Bria. When she stepped out, his eyes widened. Hey, you look great! For the first time since he'd known her, she doffed her bulky tan robes and concealing cap. Instead, she was wearing a simple pale blue tunic and trousers. Although modest in style, they revealed a figure that was slender but definitely female. She grinned. Exalted Terawenza told me I could dispense with my pilgrim robes while I was working on the collection. He was afraid that I'd catch them on some valuable artifact and knock it off a shelf. You're the prettiest girl on this planet, no kidding. She smiled, then the smile faded. You're apparently not the only one who thinks so. I had the strangest exchange with Gunnartos, Terawenza's majordomo, this morning. He followed me around and asked me why I'd wound up coming to Yalicia to be a pilgrim. Very personal questions. Han leaned forward. So why did you come here? Or do you consider that too personal to tell me, too? She smiled. Of course not, Vic. It seems so long ago. My father encouraged me to have a career, but all Mother could think about was my making a brilliant match. She thought her dreams had come true when I started seeing Dale. Han felt a stab of jealousy, but reminded himself that there had been other girls in his past. We were on the verge of getting engaged when I caught him sneaking around with another girl, so I told him it was over. My mother was furious with me for breaking up with Dale. He came from one of the richest families on Corellia. I felt betrayed and heartbroken. Just about that time, I heard about a revival that was being held by a Yalician missionary. The Yalician priest finished his service with just a few seconds of exaltation, and it made me feel so good, like I belonged with those people. So I sold my jewelry, ran away, and caught the next ship for Yalicia. When they were outside, Bria told Han she had decided not to go to the exaltation that night. Then he told her the escape plan he and Murg were working on. Han sighed. I just wish I could figure out a way to break into Terawenza's living quarters and search the place until I found where he keeps those ship access codes and the security lock codes for the collection. Security codes? Bria frowned and closed her eyes. She drew a deep breath, then began reciting a string of numbers, symbols, and letters. Han grabbed her arm in excitement. That sounds like it. How'd you get them? She gave him a tremulous smile. They were in Terawenza's mind. I'm afraid they're burned into mine along with everything else. I wish I could forget them. Well, don't wish that till we're off this mudhole. 2 days later, a jittery Han and a placid Jalas Nebel stood waiting outside Jiliak the Hutt's audience room in his winter palace. Han paced nervously. Wonder how much longer we'll have to wait.
I already told you we're perfectly safe, the Celestan replied. A messenger from one hut to another is sacrosanct. While we're delivering Zaval's message and taking back his reply, we cannot be touched.
Jiliak's Rhodian majordomo beckoned to them.
His Supreme Excellency Jiliak, clan leader and protector of the righteous, will see you now.
The huge audience chamber was filled with fawning sycophants of all species, dancing girls and boys, and an orchestra off in one corner. A massive buffet table heaped with food from a dozen worlds in the opposite corner. Jalis Nebel nudged Han, and he nervously stepped forward to present Zaval's gift. Aides opened it to reveal a contraption whose purpose Han could not imagine. But Jiliak exclaimed over the gift,
"A combination hookah and snackquarium messengers. Zaval's gift pleases me. Let us hope his message does as well. Activate it, human." "My dear Jiliak, over the past year, our ships have disappeared, and one ship was attacked. We have traced these so-called pirates to Nar Shaddaa. We know that these villainous missions were devised by you and your great-nephew, Jabba. Your enmity wounds us deeply and cuts into our profit margin. Be warned, Jiliak. Any more attacks will meet with swift reprisal upon you and your clan. We have assembled a great fleet which will surely vanquish your paltry forces."
"We have?" Han thought wildly.
Jiliak's scream of fury made Han and Nebel leap behind the buffet table. The Hutt Lord's tail lashed out in a giant sweep to strike the recording device, sending it flying. Zaval's image vanished.
"Messengers, come forth!"
Slowly, Han and Nebel crawled around the edge of the table and got shakily to their feet.
"Yes, almighty Jiliak,"
Nebel quavered. Jiliak's tail lashed as he moved back and forth, raging.
"I send you back to that worm-ridden parasitical infestation who calls himself Zaval. Tell him he has maligned me and my kin. Tell him I alone will decide when he is to die. Do you understand, messengers?"
Han had begun to recover his voice. "Yes, almighty one. I'll tell him exactly what you said." On the day Vic and Jalis Nebel flew to Nal Hutta and Murg was hunting for Mrav, Bria had just finished devotions and was heading for the path leading back to her dorm when Gunnar Toss fell into step beside her. The elderly Zissian reached out to grasp her arm, but Bria yanked it away. The Majordomo smiled as he stepped forward, barring her path.
"The Exalted One, Tirwenza, wishes to speak with you, Pilgrim 921.
The High Priest peered down at her as she made the proper obeisance.
"Pilgrim 921, you have served us faithfully, and I am pleased with you,"
Tirwenza indicated the Majordomo.
"Gunnar Toss has asked me for your hand in marriage, and I am pleased to grant his request. Stand before me, and I will pronounce the words to make you his wife."
Bria gasped. Then she felt a wash of pleasure engulf her. The sensation was so intense, so warm, so loving, that she might have agreed to anything. But just as she was about to nod like a pliant zombie, Vic's face swam before her eyes. Bria's spine stiffened and her chin came up. She forced herself to keep her eyes modestly downcast. "But, Exalted One, I have taken vows of chastity. I cannot marry anyone."
"Your piety does you credit, Pilgrim. And yet the One and the All bless fruitful unions just as they bless the celibate state. I am granting you a special dispensation so that you may marry Gunnar Toss and raise your children to be faithful to the One and the All."
Clever old monster, Bria thought. She took a long, deep breath to give herself time to think. "Very well, Exalted One. If this is the will of the One and the All, I must bow to it. But, Exalted One, I must follow the customs of my own people before I can be married. I ask for but a day to purify myself and prepare a traditional wedding gown." Bria held her breath as Tirwenza hesitated. Finally, the High Priest must have decided that she wasn't asking for that much.
"Very well, Pilgrim 921. Tomorrow evening, before the entire assembly, you and Gunnar Toss shall be joined."
"Please, Vic," Bria thought frantically. "Hurry back." Having returned to Yulisha after his and Jalas Nebel's trip to Nalhutta, Han headed for his room, where he was waylaid by Murg. The Tagorian had important news.
I found Mrav. Hear what priests tell pilgrims. Pilot will be roused at dawn to fly to Colony 2 and take her and other shipload of pilgrims to space station to meet incoming ship. Ship coming from Kessel, so no time to lose. Must escape now, or Mrav will be gone and made a slave in Kessel mines. Escape tonight? Yes.
Okay, pal, calm down. Han tried to think what had to be done. First things first, we'll need some blasters. 5 or 6 of them. You used to live in the guard's barracks. Think you can sneak in and get them? Murg nodded.
Yes.
If I were you, I'd swipe them from the Gamorreans. They're dumb as a box of rocks, and they sleep like logs. Murg's whiskers twitched with amusement.
Yes.
The first item on Han's agenda was to knock out the colony's comm units. He didn't want anyone summoning reinforcements. When he reached the comm center, he dug in his pocket for the scrap of flimsy that Bria had given him, containing all of the security codes she'd gained from her foray into Terowenz's mind. With a soft electronic hum, the door swung open. Han grinned as he crept inside. That's my girl. There was a guard stationed there, as Han had known there would be. A Twi'lek asleep in the chair. Han drew his blaster, changed the setting to stun, and squeezed the trigger. A blue circular burst erupted, enveloping the guard. The Twi'lek jerked once, then collapsed bonelessly into the chair, looking exactly the same, except the snores had stopped. Stepping over to the comm unit, Han pulled out the small multi-tool most pilots carried in their pockets and set to work loosening the casing. His eyes widened at the myriad wires, circuits, transponders, cables, and row after row of identical unlabeled compartments. Han groaned aloud. How am I supposed to know which of these carries the line to the power generators? Selecting a wire at random, he cut it with the multi-tool's small laser torch. The power indicator remained on. Han cut another wire, then another. Stupid board! Han drew his blaster, thumbed it up to full intensity, and discharged it right into the middle of the stubborn console's innards. Flame shot up. The smell of singed insulation tickled his nostrils. Sparks erupted, and the power indicator went out. Han's next step was to find Bria. He knew that her little bunk was on the second floor of the dorm. Han tiptoed up the stairs, blaster set on stun at the ready, but he met no one. He wasn't sure which bunk Bria occupied. Peering through his infrared goggles he had borrowed, he padded quietly down the central aisle, glancing at the sleeping faces in the couches, pallets, and bunks favored by various species. A board creaked beneath his foot, and Han paused, holding his breath. A figure clad in a white nightshirt sat up in a bunk.
Vic?
Bria whispered. Han nodded and beckoned urgently.
Fast!
She pulled her tunic on over the nightshirt, and they made a cautious way down the stairs and out into the blackness of the night. He broke into a run, and she pounded gamely alongside him. Soon, though, her stride shortened, and he could tell that she was fighting a stitch in her side. Slowing to a rapid walk, he towed her along the jungle path. She yielded to his urgent tug and began jogging again. By the time they reached the administration center, Murg was waiting for them outside Turowenz's collection room. At his feet lay a pile of blasters. Bria's eyes widened.
What are those for?
Han was already busy at the door.
Diversion. Okay, now, here's this bypass code. As before, the door opened.
Han turned to the other two.
All right, you start packing. I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Han grabbed the blasters and headed out the door. Carrying 6 guns in one's arms, he discovered, wasn't easy. He shoved them into the front of his coverall and into his belt. They impeded his motion somewhat, but that was better than juggling them in his arms. It took him nearly 7 minutes to reach the first Glitterstim factory, and another 2 to creep up close enough to the guard, a huge Gamorrean, to stun the alien at close range. When Han reached the bottom level where Bria had worked, he turned right to where he'd caught a glimpse of the containers of raw Glitterstim waiting to be apportioned to the workers.
Yanking 5 blasters out of his belt, Han arranged them atop the glitter stim and set each powerful weapon to overload. A thin whining filled the air, growing louder in the cavernous space. That ought to do it. Han knew he had only minutes to get out before the whole place exploded. He bolted for the turbo lift. He was halfway back to the administration center when he felt the ground shake and turned to see a gout of yellow flame reaching into the night. Moments later, the blue sparks of Glitterstim fizzled up like fireworks, sending sparkling streamers high into the air. Han could barely guess how many credits he was watching go up in smoke. It was a sobering sight. Guards appeared all over now, shouting and yelling questions, but none stopped or questioned Han. He made it to the door of the collection room, looked both ways, and then slipped inside. Bria and Murg looked up, saw him, then relaxed visibly.
"What did Vic do?" Murg asked.
Han grinned. "Vic blew up the glitter sim factory. The whole bunch of pilgrims are now out of a job." He reached for a hand-sized sculpture of a Torsk from Alzok 3, carved from lapis, and when it proved heavier than he'd realized, yanked hard to pull it toward him. The sculpture tilted up to reveal a snarl of wires and transponders. Next door, in Tirowenza's personal apartments, an alarm began to buzz stridently. Han stared at the sculpture, then at his fellow thieves. Uh-oh. The doors on either side of the collection room burst open simultaneously. Tirowenza stood framed in the door to his apartment, snorting with rage. Zaval and a squad of guards filled the double doors to the corridor. Han grabbed Bria and dived behind the huge white jade fountain that stood in the middle of the room, while Murg took refuge behind the central support pillar. Zaval shot forward on his repulsor lift sled.
"Get them!"
Tirowenza charged like a mad beast, head down, horn ready. Han snapped off a shot, saw the blue stun bolt, and cursed as he thumbed the weapon's intensity up to full. The stun beam didn't even slow Tirowenza down. Murg aimed, fired, and brought down a Sulistan guard. Han squeezed the trigger again. The blaster bolt ricocheted off Zaval's sled and struck the support pillar nearest the door, burning it half through. The pillar sagged, but held. As Tirowenza headed for Murg, the big Tagorian leaped out and grabbed the High Priest, clutching him around the neck and by his horn. The Talanda Till's momentum caused his massive hindquarters to swing around and slam into the middle pillar with a huge bump. The floor quivered and dust sifted downward from the ceiling. Tirowenza's rear feet skidded, and the High Priest went down. The ground shook again. Han snapped off a shot and a Gamorrean screamed and fell back into the hallway. Another blaster bolt sizzled past Han, so close that he felt it singe his hair. He dropped to the floor, rolled, and snapped off two more shots at the underside of Zaval's sled. As he'd intended, the blaster bolts hit the housing for the repulsor lift unit. Instead of sinking to the floor, the sled's speed and directional controls went wild. With Zaval vainly trying to control it, the big sled hurtled forward at top speed. Mowing down everything in its path, the sled careened around the collections room with Zaval, a helpless passenger. Then the sled plowed into the room's central pillar. The support column buckled and groaned, then bent in two and snapped off. Then the pillar Han had partially vaporized followed suit. Half of the ceiling bulged, cracked, and plummeted down. Han recovered himself just in time to yank Bria out of the way as a huge chunk of stone hurtled at them from the upper level. Zaval screamed as massive chunks pinned him to the shattered remains of his sled. Coughing and gagging, Han crawled off Bria. He stared at the spot where Zaval had been, but all he could see of the buried hut overlord was his spasmodically jerking tail. Tirowenza had thrown himself beneath the protection of a massive antique table and remained relatively unscathed. When the debris stopped falling, he crawled out from under the dust, lowered his head, and charged. Han fired a bolt into his right flank, sending him crashing to the floor with a scream. "Come on!" Han grabbed Bria and a knapsack of stolen goods and gestured to Murg. "We're getting out of here." Slipping in the rubble and
stumbling over bodies, the three thieves headed for the double doors where Han motioned his comrades back and cautiously slid his head around the edge of the door, only to be rewarded by a blaster bolt that nearly took his ear off.
Merg, take Bria out the other way. Go through Turowenza's door and we'll catch them in a crossfire on the count of 50.
The Tagorian nodded and he and Bria slipped back through the ruins of the treasure room. Silently, Han counted. At 15, he stuck his hand around the edge of the door and snapped off four quick shots. He was rewarded with a howl of agony. One more down. He waited, counting and trying not to cough on the dust that filled the air. 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50. Han dived out the door, hit the corridor rolling, and fired. Red blaster bolts zinged past his legs and where his head would have been, but he got another guard. The remaining two guards took to their heels and pounded away from Merg and Bria, leaping over Han's still recumbent body as they did so. Han got to his feet just in time to hear Merg let out a huge battle roar and grapple with... who? Han couldn't see anyone. Has he gone crazy? Han wondered. Then he heard a loud hiss and glimpsed a reddish-orange eye and a mouth full of teeth. He saw a blaster wave, seemingly in midair, and suddenly he could make out the warty, scaled being. A skin changer. The creature was the exact color of the walls and floor in the dimly lit corridor. Merg growled as he savagely attacked the era. Han winced as Merg fell to his knees, grasping his foe. With a motion like a striking growl viper, the Tagorian buried his fangs in the era's throat and ripped. Blood spurted into the air. Look out! Bria yelled, and Han instinctively ducked. Bria's blaster went off in stun mode just over his head, making his ears ring. He straightened up in time to see Gunnar toss slowly crumpling to the floor as a blaster slipped from his fingers. Han walked over to the old major domo and, picking up the blaster, slipped it into his belt. Bria came to stand beside him. Oh, Vic, all I can think is that if you hadn't come back today, tonight I'd have been his wife. She shuddered. Huh? Turowenza was going to force me to marry him tomorrow. Well, I'm glad you only stunned him. He may have been a lecherous old creep, but how can I blame him for being attracted to you? The talisman was a little larger than the Yelishan dream, but instead of cargo space, most of its interior was given over to lavish passenger quarters and amenities. It was proportioned and laid out for the Talanda Til, so only the pilot's cabin contained human-style seats. There was one small, human-sized bunk in a guard's cabin. The rest of the passenger cabins were outfitted with the sleeping hammocks the Talanda Til favored. Merg strapped himself in.
Now from Rav. Right, Vic?
Right, pal. We should be there at sunrise. Oh, and by the way, there's something I'd better tell you two.
What?
Asked Bria and Merg together. My name's not Vic Drago. My real name is Han Solo. It'd be good if you started calling me that. Colony 2 was on the other side of the Mountains of Faith, set on the northeastern edge of the shallow ocean that enclosed the entire eastern continent. Bria pointed excitedly.
I see them! There's a big crowd assembling at the altar!
Carefully, Han brought the talisman in over the amphitheater. He was conscious of all the pilgrims looking up and pointing as he dropped lower and lower with each pass. Han could see several priests and a bevy of guards behind the milling crowd of pilgrims. He knew the Sacredos must be wondering why the High Priest's personal yacht was being used to ferry pilgrims to the Kessel slave ship. Bria went to the rear of the ship to help Merg prepare for his descent by wire and harness. Before long, she called out, Merg is ready, Han. Han glanced at the belly holocam screen in time to see Merg descending, his blaster still holstered. The cam didn't provide audio, but he watched as Merg's mouth opened and knew he must be calling to Mrav. Two things happened simultaneously. A tall figure in a pilgrim's robe suddenly broke and raced toward Merg's dangling figure, and the guard aimed his blaster. He saw a spurt of blaster fire from the guard's weapon, answered twice in rapid succession by Bria and Merg's blaster fire. Two more guards drew their weapons and fired. The crowd of pilgrims panicked and scattered, trampling each other and the guards. Han fired a burst from the ship's light laser cannon, careful to aim over the heads of the running, screaming crowd. More fire from the guards. Han saw Murg sag in his harness, clutching his side. Mirav reached him a second later and leaped to wrap her arms and legs around her mate, anchoring herself to him. Bria was firing steadily. Han saw a Gamorrean go down. The wire was ascending now, revolving slowly with its off-balance load. Han targeted the Altar of Promises, made sure his aim had pinpoint accuracy, and fired the laser cannon again. The altar went up with a boom Han could hear from inside the talisman. From the nether regions of the ship, he heard Bria's voice. "I've got them! Let's go!" Han checked that the bay doors were safely closed, then took the talisman up in a rush. Han glanced at the Tagorian who slid into the co-pilot's seat beside him and started in surprise. "You're not Murg."
"I am Rav,"
the female Tagorian introduced herself. She doffed her pilgrim's robe and her white and orange striped coat blazed like fire.
"I will handle the weapons for you. In our species, females are better as technicians. Besides, Murg is wounded."
Han felt a stab of concern. "Is he going to be okay?"
"He should be. My people are very strong and hardy. Your Bria is with him. He is resting."
Mrav looked up at Han in alarm.
"Who shot at us?"
Han studied his readouts. "That's what I'm trying to find out. I don't think the priests have surface to air stuff, but I'm hanged if I can see." Han broke off with a whoop of laughter as the talisman shuddered again. Mrav looked at Han as if he were crazy.
"There is someone shooting at us, and they are gaining."
Han waved a dismissive hand. "Oh, it's just old Jalas Nebel in the Elysian dream. The priests must have ordered him to come up here and shoot us down. He wouldn't shoot me any more than I'd shoot him. So he's firing his laser cannon, just missing us by a hair each time, making it look good." "We're almost clear of the atmosphere, and if Nebel's got a grain of sense, he'll take the dream and get his droopy jowl little carcass off Yalisha, too." Another near hit caused the talisman to shiver. Mrav studied the sensors and called out to him,
"I see a vehicle above us, in our path."
Han looked up and swore in six languages.
"That's a Corellian Corvette. What's it doing here?"
His hands flew over the controls as he began evasive maneuvers, increasing speed and shearing away from the huge vessel. Suddenly, the talisman jerked hard and bucked. Bria burst into the cabin.
"What's wrong?"
she demanded. Han began shutting down his engines to avoid burning them out. As he did so, a voice erupted from the comm unit.
"Attention, talisman. This is Captain Negin Rios in command of the Helot's Shackle out of Kessel. We advise you to shut down your engines. You are caught in our tractor beam."
"I know," Han yelled, not bothering to activate his comm unit. "Thanks for telling me."
"We have detained you because I have been advised by planetary authorities that you have taken the talisman without authorization."
Bria was staring at the Corellian Corvette. "We're being pulled toward it, Han." Han nodded dully. "There's nothing I can do, sweetheart. They've got us caught. We can't break free." By now, the talisman had been nearly drawn into the gaping maw of the ship's docking bay. Only a few hundred meters separated the two ships. The Elysian Dream came streaking toward them, moving at terrible speed. Everyone in the talisman's control cabin ducked as the little freighter flashed by overhead, then banked hard to starboard. Jalas Nebel took the Elysian Dream between the talisman and Helot's Shackle at full throttle. The distance was so tight that the little Sulistan had to turn the Dream on her side to make it between the two closing vessels.
"Go, Nebel!" cried Han. "Go!"
When the Dream rushed between the two ships, it broke the tractor beam for a few precious seconds. Han suddenly released ship, ricocheted away from the Corellian Corvette like a blaster bolt, shearing off to the left, while Jalas Nebel sped away to the right.
Yee-haw!
Han yelled in sheer exultation as he felt his ship soaring away from the Helot's shackle. Han grinned at Bria. Say goodbye to paradise, sweetheart. Han awakened to the sound of soft, muffled sobbing. He had been sleeping on the floor in Teruenza's living area, on a pile of expensive carpets he dragged into place. He found Bria in the guards' room, sitting up on the little human-sized bunk, arms around her knees, her face pressed against them. Han went over to her. "Hey, what's wrong? What's happened?" She began to shudder. "It's the exaltation, Han. I woke up and realized that the pilgrims are gathering for devotions right now, and I'll never have it again. Never feel that good again." Han didn't know what to say. He realized that Bria was missing the physical and emotional sensations that accompanied the exaltation, just as an addict would miss a drug. The realization scared him. Would Bria be able to fight this dependency and win? Would she go through life mourning what she'd lost? He spoke cautiously, not wanting to frighten her by voicing his real thoughts. "Of course you'll miss it for a day or so, maybe a week. But we'll all help you through it, honey, and then..." He made an all-encompassing gesture with his hand. "It's a big galaxy, sweetheart, and it's all ours now." The wedding ceremony between Murg and Mrav took place at sunset of their third day on Togoria. Han and Bria stood beside Murg and Mrav as they solemnly faced their assembled clans. Their fur gleamed from hours of careful grooming. First, the betrothed couple faced their clans, turning slowly so that all might see their faces. Then Mrav and Murg turned to face each other. Han blinked in surprise as a low, growling yowl began emanating from their throats. Both bared their teeth and hissed. Their claws sprang out. Then, so quickly that the eye could scarcely follow, they sprang at each other and went down on the ground, teeth locked on each other's throats. Growling, yowling, and snarling, they rolled over and over, slashing at each other with their front paw hands. Their feet were busy, too, digging deep into each other's furred belly. Han looked over at Bria, who was looking faintly alarmed. But no one in the crowd seemed to find anything amiss about what was happening. "It takes all kinds to make a galaxy," Han thought. Finally, panting and growling, the two combatants broke apart. Despite the apparent ferocity of their attacks, no blood was visible on their coats. They circled each other, and their yowls gradually died away into soft, gentle noises. They stood close together, rubbing their faces against each other for a long time. Han could hear their hoarse purring from where he was standing. At the end of the wordless ceremony, which Han and Bria found mostly unintelligible, Murg grabbed Mrav by the loose folds of skin at the back of her neck. Clutching her in his teeth and powerful arms, he lifted her and carried her across the circle. The crowd parted before them. Murg vanished into the darkness, still carrying his mate. Moments later, two loud, triumphantly ecstatic yowls broke the stillness, and then silence reigned. The next morning, Bria discovered that Han was waiting outside for her. He stood beside a Mozgoth, a large flying lizard Murg had told him were the principal means of travel on Togoria. Togorians had domesticated the Mozgoths long ago. Both species worked together to protect each other against even larger winged reptiles, the deadly Lyphans, who stole both Togorian cubs and Mozgoth eggs. Han held out a hand. "Come on! Climb up!" With a thrust of the Mozgoth's powerful wings, Han and Bria were airborne and climbing steadily. Bria found herself high above the trees and the tops of buildings. The wind rushed by her face, blowing her hair, bringing tears to her eyes. "Oh, Han, this is wonderful." Half an hour later, the broad river they'd been following widened until it branched into a large delta. Han turned the Mozgoth north, and then, within a few more minutes, Bria saw the curling white breakers splashing over silvery gold sand. They spent the whole day at the beach. Bria taught Han how to swim. They shared the provisions he'd brought, and then they walked along the beach for hours, hand in hand.
Han grinned at Bria. You look beautiful. She sighed. I feel as though I own the world. This day, I'll remember it always, Han. His head turned, and his lips found her mouth. Bria closed her eyes, and time seemed to stop. She kissed him back, and it was a long, long time before they spoke again. Han set a leisurely course for the Corellian system that took Talisman far from Hutt space. He was deliberately prolonging his and Bria's time alone together. Inwardly, he was dreading having to go back to Corellia and meet her family. Besides, he was trying to give her as much time as he could to heal. He knew she still pined for the exaltation, though she no longer broke down in panic attacks or fits of sobbing. But several times he'd awakened in the night to find her gone. Why can't I be enough for her? He asked himself. Why isn't our love enough? On Tralis, Han was able to sell the talisman, although for considerably less than he had hoped to get. Later that day, after he had gotten fake IDs made, Janil Andras and his wife, Drea Andras, boarded an inter-system shuttle bound for Corellia. Bria had worried about posing as husband and wife, but Han had assured her that the Hutt security alert bulletins listed them as being single. The pair arrived on their homeworld early in the evening and caught a transcontinental shuttle to the southern continent, where the Theron home was located. Bria contacted her family, and moments later, an expensive speeder pulled up outside the station. A handsome, distinguished-looking man with gray hair and a heavy-set build was at the controls. As Han and Bria approached the vehicle, the man leapt out of the speeder and, laughing and crying at the same time, embraced his daughter. Long moments later, he turned to shake Han's hand. I'm pleased to meet you. I understand from Bria that you saved her from, well, from terrible things. All I can say is thank you. Thank you, Solo, sir. Make it Han. Theron's grip was firm. Please, call me Ren, Han. The ride to Bria's home was short. They passed through a reinforced set of security gates, then headed down a road that seemed to have no other houses on it. Han saw high fences, the type he used to sneer at back during his days as a burglar. The Theron house was huge, wings and modified towers and landscaping to match. Before they could reach the front door, Bria's mother came bursting out, dressed in a flowing gown that Han could only recognize as rich. The woman enfolded Bria in her arms. Darling! Midway through the whole hubbub of greetings, tears, embraces, and excited questions and answers, Bria's brother came home. Han recalled Bria saying her brother's name was Pavik. He was a handsome youth and seemed genuinely fond of his sister. It was a long time before Bria could disengage herself from her family to introduce Han. Eyes shining, she took his hand and led him over to meet her mother, Sarah Theron, and her brother. Han shook hands and put on his best manners. Pleased to meet you, Lady Theron, and you, Pavik. Bria's mother's hand clasp was limp and unenthusiastic. She studied Han, and he gained the quick impression that she didn't much like what she saw. He sighed inwardly. I've got a very bad feeling about this. Refusing to let his discomfort show, Han joined the family in a luxurious parlor, where he lounged back against the opulent cushions with a deliberate show of ease. Bria's mother said stiffly, I gather we have you to thank for Bria's return. Her eyes were fixed on Han's blaster, and he realized that, like most citizens, none of Bria's family went armed. Tough lady, Han thought. I don't take off my blaster for you or anybody. Well, I tried to be helpful, Lady Theron, but I couldn't have managed without Bria. She's plenty tough when she wants to be. Good in a fight. Lady Theron stiffened, and Han realized that the woman would not regard what he'd said as a compliment. Pavik Theron turned to Han. So, Han, what do you do? He was staring closely at Han, his eyes assessing in a way that made the pilot uncomfortable. Oh, whatever it takes to get by. Mostly I'm a pilot. Lady Theron brightened slightly. In the Navy? Are you an officer? No, freighters, ma'am. I can fly most anything, anywhere. Ren Theron sat forward and said with a note of approval in his voice, I started out as a pilot many years ago, when I was about your age, Han.
Worked my way up until I owned the shipping company. That's how I made my first million. Han thought of telling Ren Theron that he was intending to enter the Imperial Academy, but the habit of not revealing any personal information was too ingrained. He just smiled at Bria's father. Those were exciting days, sir. Lots of pirates back then, right? Ren Theron smiled. I had a few run-ins. I imagine you have, too. Han smiled back. A few. Pavik Theron was still staring at Han.
Oh, you look so familiar. I know I've seen you somewhere before. A barbecue, I think? I have a mental picture of you at a barbecue that followed a swoop racing meet.
Han stiffened inwardly. Now that Pavik mentioned it, Han remembered him, too. Pavik was probably 2 or 3 years older than Han and had been a frequent competitor at some of the swoop races Han had competed in. He answered as casually as he could manage, Sorry, don't remember you. Afraid I ain't been to a Corellian barbecue since I was a kid.